listeners, if you love the Hashtag Am Writing podcast, you'll love the Hashtag Am Writing emails. So sign up. You get show notes and links, sure, but that's not all. You'll get invites to ride-alongs along with bonus episodes and thoughts on revision, TikTok, and more, plus access to commenting and chatting on Substack. And we will never, ever share our list with anyone else, because we wouldn't, and because that sounds like way too much work, and we're mostly in this for the hang. So pop your name on our list at amwritingpodcast.com.
Is it recording?
Now it's recording.
Yay!
Go ahead.
This is the part where I stare blankly at the microphone, try to remember what I'm supposed to be doing.
All right, let's start over.
Awkward pause.
I'm going to wrestle some papers.
Okay.
Now 1, 2, 3. Okay.
I'm KJ Delantonia, and this is Hashtag Am Writing, the weekly podcast about all things writing. Writing fiction, nonfiction, pitches, proposals. We are the podcast about finding a way to sit down and get your work done.
I'm Jess Leahy. I'm the author of The Gift of Failure and The Addiction Inoculation, and you can find my work at The Atlantic, The Washington Post, and The New York Times.
I'm Serena Bowen. I'm the author of multiple romance novels, and my new one is called The New Guy. Came out last month.
And I'm KJ Delantonia, the author of the novels The Chicken Sisters and In Her Boots, and the forthcoming, as we speak, novel Playing the Witch Card, as well as the nonfiction book How to Be a Happier Parent. And I am also the former editor and lead writer of The Motherlode at The New York Times.
She was my boss.
It was.
True story. Today we're going to talk about something that I find particularly frustrating, mainly because it feels like it's not the work. But again and again and again, you too remind me of how important this part of the process is. So today we're going to talk outlining. And Serena has had a very long history with honing her process, and outlining has been a really important part of that. So I would love to hear a lot from Serena about how important this process is and why I should be patient with myself when I feel frustrated when I have to go back to the outlining.
Okay, fun. Well,
yeah.
The
reason this came up is that I was writing, and everything was going great. And then I realized, oh, crap, I just don't know where I'm going next. And I realized that was a failure of planning for me. And I think part of me hangs on to that the Stephen King fantasy of you just start writing and it all comes to you and it all flows and everything lands in the perfect spot at the end, which I have to admit I've been able to get away with in my nonfiction from time to time, but it's really not working so well in my fiction. And so I texted and said how frustrating it was that I had to go back to the outlining. And you made it very clear that it's an important part of the process.
Well, okay, a couple things. So you kind of hit upon the point of outlining. Like, the point of outlining is not to waste your time, and it's not to live the work before you actually get to experience the story. It's to plan things so that you don't end up on a dead-end street.
Which is where I was yesterday.
Just so nobody runs away, it can look like a lot of things.
That's right. In fact, when I was a kid, I was taught what an outline needed to look like at school. And honestly, that whole lesson of how to do outlining really turned me off from outlining for decades and decades. So I came to outlining sort of around the block way, like the long distance way, where I would start a book, and I would know some things about what happened in the future and kind of where I wanted to end up. And so I had to sort of come to it sideways. And then I worked on some books with people who were really plotters, who outlined, you know, every scene. And that was really illuminating because they never ended up on a dead end street. So that kind of turned me into more of an outliner. But the thing is, our relationship with outlining has to change on every project because it doesn't go the same way on every project. So I love people who have great outlining strategies, but But it's just like reading a book about how to take care of an infant. Like the author of the book is certain they know what to do, you know, and then your own baby like hadn't read the book and like doesn't agree with with the timing they set up in there. So that it always has that possibility of letting you down or making you sure that this book was written for someone who's a different species than you are. So we have to treat ourselves gently in the outlining process and to always remember that the goal is to have a path so that when we get, you know, bogged down, we can periscope up and look out and go back to that outline and say, what did I mean to do again? And is the thing I'm doing right now servicing that future goal? And if it's not, why?
So here's my question though. I guess because some of the, I think I had the same problem with outlining that you did, like the one, A, B, C, little yes. One, two, one, two. Yeah.
Don't forget the Roman numerals.
I know. Really exactly.
So you can only outline up to 10 or maybe 15 because who knows what happens after that. So you've got limits.
As someone who has operated primarily as a pantser in terms of my nonfiction, as much as you can pants nonfiction, that's what I do. Like I do a ton of research, get the lay of the land, and then sort of dive in and later on sort of rearrange things and, you know, but that's with short articles. And sometimes with the longer book, yeah, I have to have that book proposal outline in order to really know. And I guess I have to say a book proposal is an outline. So I'm doing all of this pish posh outlines, but I suppose all this raving I've been doing about the importance of book proposals, that's outlining, huh?
A table of contents is an outline.
Okay. But here's my worry. I've been so attached to this romantic vision of your character speaking to you and your characters becoming real and your characters leading you to places that you never thought they'd lead you, that I was turned off to outlining as something that, you know, like before we start a podcast, if we have a conversation, we often say, no, let's keep it for the podcast. Let's keep it immediate and bright and real. Do you ever find that outlining undermines the life in your writing? That's what I worry about.
I think it gives my writing. I'm going to dive in, okay. Even though I can tell Serena wants to talk, because it gives my writing the life. And this is why. Because what happens to me when I finally nail down, like, for example, those last scenes, when I finally get know where they're going to be and I could conceivably put them on an outline, I often will write those and the first draft is what's in the book. On the other hand, my first chapter, I will frequently get back from my editor with a note that's like, this is overwritten, which it took me a while to figure out what that means. But it often means I just rewrote it too many times because I was fixing it probably while I was trying to figure out what was going to happen next. So I actually think that outlining can enable you to preserve the freshness of the first time you write something, because you maybe write the right thing the first time instead of writing the wrong thing 16 times and then trying to mash two lines that were great in the first version of this first of those 16 into the 16th version.
So maybe the outlining is a kind of first draft.
Yeah, it can be.
Okay, that helps me.
Yes, so I have felt occasionally that once I've outlined a book that I was for a moment less excited to go and write those things than I had been before. But that's not the same thing as actually squashing the life that you're going to put into the writing when you go and do it. For me, the greater risk of outlining is just that I spend the time doing it and then I do it wrong anyway. Then I go in and I write the first 35% of the book, let's say, and then I realize that the rest of that outline that I labored over is wrong. So that's okay, though, when that happens, because it's okay to sharpen up the emotional arc of a novel as you work your way through it. And sometimes what sounded good in a two-line description of your outline doesn't actually work when you get there. And that's okay, too. I'm actually having this problem right now. I'm at, like, 90% in a book, and I had to go away for the weekend, and I realized while I was away from my book that the pace at the end was just wrong. You know, but I'd outlined what the catastrophe was going to be, and then I ended up rushing to get there, so I screwed up the pace, not because I'd picked the wrong crisis point, but because I was in too big a hurry to arrive at this moment of drama, and I hadn't set it up properly. So it's not like outlining solves all your problems, but when you go into a book, people read novels to feel things, and anyone who tells you otherwise is lying. So if you don't know what you want your reader to feel at some point, then you really need to do something that either you call an outline or planning or just dreaming on paper, however you look at it. Because if you know how you want your reader to feel at the moment when everything has gone to shit, then it's really hard to end up on a dead end street. Like, you're like, I'm driving towards that big moment, that terrifying thing, that sad thing, that joyous thing. I'm driving there. And so every time you look up from the page towards that distant mountain, you still know how you're getting there. And of course, more of your outline would be, what are the things between here and that distant peak? And the more of those you can sort of set up for yourself, are also crucial. But, you know, but the point isn't that peak will not be less joyous when I get to it, just because I've thought about it so far. It will, you know, it will be just as exciting.
I guess it allows for pantsing along the way too.
Yeah.
I could see a universe in which, you know, you're writing a thriller or a mystery, and you know that at the end you want the reader to feel terrified that the protagonist will lie and destroy their marriage. I don't know. But that doesn't necessarily mean you know why they will feel that or who will cause them to feel that. Mm-hmm. You just know that's what you're aiming to. I think at some point you need an answer. But I don't write mysteries and thrillers. So, because I've you know, listened to people who say, well, I don't necessarily know who did it until the end. But then they would have to go back and fix a lot of things. So
I guess I'm also worried that the temptation would be to shoehorn your writing into the outline rather than letting the writing have a life of its own if it does need to change. And knowing the difference between a flight of fancy that's not going to go anywhere and something that's worth pursuing as a pantsing moment, I guess. I tend to get pretty wedded to the work I've done, and it's always hard for me to toss a, you know, a day's worth of work and say, you know, well, that was worthless.
It's never worthless.
No, I know. I mean, I know that. Yeah.
I know you absolutely know that, but yeah, I mean, sometimes you have to, write it to throw it away. Otherwise,
which is what happened to me on Saturday when I just got so frustrated and had to go back to the outlining and then realized I might have been okay in the first place. But I'm still not sure. So, Serena, do you find that your outlining informs some of your pre-writing? Because you've talked in the past about how important pre-writing is to your process. Is the outline something you depend on to help you with the pre-writing?
Well, I definitely look at it. And sometimes I get knocked like a pinball back and forth between the actual document where I'm composing the story and the outline. Like, I'll forget to look at the outline. I'll use the document. I'll go on with the next thing. And then I'll realize that I'm a little twisted up. And then I'll have to go back to the outline and say, all right, where were we driving? Let's course correct. Let's make sure this fits. Oh, wait, it does. Okay, but I just forgot this one important point. You know, I have to keep moving back and forth. But also the format of my actual outline is not Roman numerals. It's like it's a whole set of transitions that I'm trying to make. Like, what are all the things that the characters are going to change before the book is over? They started off in one career and they ended up in another one. They started off hating something and then ended up loving it. They started off questioning their ability to solve a certain kind of problem and ended up feeling certain about it. So it's like more than one line. It's a lot of little lines. And the more of them that I have in my head, like the more of these things that I know, then it's like having extra tools in your box because you can reach for one of them next and, actually, I don't want that one right now. I'm going to use this.
And I think can have different sets of outline that look like that. So I had occasion to try to remember what my outline for the Chicken Sisters looked like the other day. And I realized that one outline that I had was every bad thing the sisters do to each other. And that was just a list of how they ping-ponged back and forth because I was trying to create something similar. So that was one outline. And another outline was how the one character changed, and another outline was how another character changed. And then at some point you have to, I'm gesturing wildly with my fingers, putting them together. But yeah, at some point you have to put them together, but you have all these lists that superimpose on each other.
That's great. I love the what are all the things they do to each other. That is gold.
Yeah, it really was. And going to that and being like, okay, that's something I need in the next book is like, what are all the things? So, you have the section that if you're a fan of say the Cat Writes a Novel, which I am, they call Fun and Games, or the Promise of the Premise. It's called a lot of things, but anyway, it's whatever you've set up. Like if you've said, they're going to turn this mansion into a haunted house, then you need a list of the things they're going to do along the way. And then you map that on to your list of the changes they're going to make and the emotions they're going to feel and the ways that they're going to change.
One thing I'm really, really glad I did, and I think I've mentioned this before, is because I'm writing a thriller, and there are sort of things the reader knows, things the antagonist knows, and things the protagonist knows, and they're all different all the time, but I have to keep a running list of who knows what when, and I'm doing that with three different colors, and at the end of each sort of chapter outline, I have a list of who knows what at this point in time. That aside from the outlining part, that list of just who knows what when has been really important because otherwise I'd have to go back and reread stuff to figure out, wait a second, did I make sure, does this person know about this particular element yet? So that I think has been the most important part of this outline for me. And so I guess I'm just realizing I'm admitting to this whole outlining thing being useful. But that was a recommendation that Jenny Nash gave me early on. She said, it's going to be hard to keep track of who knows what when. So maybe have a list of who knows what when. And so that's actually been really important for me.
That thing kicked my ass when I was writing my own suspense novel, like who knows what when, because there are moments when I had to go in and change that because I recognize places where the pace would improve if I tweaked the order of revelation. And then then you have just broken like seven things about who knows what when. And it's hard.
Yeah, it's a little bit like programming when you've got to go back and relook. And then to add to that, since I have been reading Serena's thriller, I'm about a fifth of the way through. On top of that, you add in flashbacks, flash forwards kind of thing. And then you've got timing issues too. So I'm frankly unclear on how you stayed on top of everything all the time with the changes in chronology and stuff like that.
Oh, I had to outline my own book after I wrote it.
Oh, I've had to do that every single time.
Seriously? And I have a double spread in my notebook for this novel with a calendar on it. It's like the actual calendar, and then I wrote down which chapters occurred on which days so that I wouldn't goof that up, and then, oh crap, Memorial Day's in there somewhere. She can't go to work on Memorial Day. And
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, and I did it because I know that sometime in my future, I'm getting this book back from the copy editor who does not have it yet. And that person is going to make me defend things.
Right. Like, why is it winter? You said snow was falling, like, and then now it's daffodils and suddenly it's snowing again. Yeah.
Yep. And just this is a workplace book. So it really matters what day of the week it is. Like, you can't have, and then tomorrow, and you're like, well, crap, it's Sunday now.
Well, mine is the week leading up to Halloween. And this whole question of, like, how long I could realistically, there's a thing happening in the book that can't happen for very long. Like, realistically, this person cannot be kept hidden, basically, for that long. So, and I couldn't. In the end, I didn't, it's, you know, like, it won't match up to a particular year. I just decided, okay, this year, Halloween's on Saturday. And then we're just,
it's your imaginary year. Yeah, you can do whatever you want.
It is. And that's a glorious moment when you realize that, by the way, because I actually started with, okay, it's going to be 2024. Damn it. Then Halloween's on a Monday. What do they do about school? I was like, no, that's just not what I'm doing. So that's like a whole, there are so many outlines that go
there
into
this. There are so many outlines.
And if you don't like the word outline, you can call them lists or charts.
You can
call them whatever you want. Outlining for me is key.
This has been incredibly helpful for me because I think, as Serena said, I think I've been thinking about it in a really restrictive way that feels confining to me when, now that I talk it through with you, I realize it's actually freeing me up a lot. So that's that alone right there. I mean, I'm a little bit contrary. Like KJ, you know, the minute we're told that we have to have something done on Monday, we're going to have it done some other time because we just can be a little contrary. So the minute you tell me, oh, you have to outline this, it feels a little like I'm being assigned something that isn't the writing. I guess that's the big point. To me, it hasn't felt like the writing itself. And then I'm like my poor students when I'm teaching them about like research papers and they roll their eyes when I talk about the outlines and they're like, oh, this is the most boring thing on the planet. And I, in my teacher voice, say, yes, but it's essential to the process of having an organized, you know, foolproof way to, you know, and then this has been really, really helpful because I like thinking about the fact that it can be about the calendar. It can be about who knows what when. It can be about the main, it can be about the emotional points, about these, you know, beats that, as Serena's talked about in the past, we talk about beats, emotional beats that have to happen. And are those happening in the right order and in the right places?
My mantra of the year is good writing comes last. Like I'm not going to spend any time describing that sunset until I'm sure the sun's going to set in that scene.
Well, that's good.
Well, that is good. But I would also say that my mantra then would be the emotional beats are all that matter. Like if you get that straight, then it's really hard to mess up the book. Like if you know who's going to feel big things and when they might feel them, you know, you're doing pretty well.
Sorry, I was writing down KJ's brilliant. Because I'm like, that's now my mantra going forward is I'm not going to write about that sunset until I know whether or not the sun's going to set. That's my new mantra.
Well, and that has been a thing. And you know what? I think this is part of the transition. The translation, that could be a new word. The translation from nonfiction to fiction is good writing comes last, because that is not necessarily true in nonfiction. So I'm going to put that aside. But in fiction, it is writing to make a list of the emotional beats. It is writing, you know, to have the words, they get into the car and go to Morocco. That is writing that counts. And then later you go back and you fill in a lot of words around they and get and car. And it works, but I think to think of outlining is not writing. I think of it more like, you know, your story starts out as like three lines, and then tomorrow you make it 12 lines, but you're expanding it in both directions, forwards and you know, up towards the beginning and down towards the end, and then every day you're sort of expanding it more, and it isn't until you sort of know. Until you have a shape that you can work with, that you start writing actual words. But it's still writing.
It's still writing. One of my favorite lists is, when am I going to make the reader laugh? When am I going to make the reader cry? When am I going to make the reader go, oh, shit? Because I feel like I haven't done my job unless all those things happen. Or, you know, genre dependent. Like, you don't have to make people laugh if you're writing some, you know, dark, twisty thing. But you still could.
You could. I, for one, would appreciate it if you did.
Okay. You've turned me around. I'm feeling so much better about this.
And I have one last thing I want to say about outlining, which is this. If you hate outlining, or you like the way you outline, you don't want to change the way you outline, or you're resisting something about outlining, the question to ask yourself is, am I finishing things? Because if you're finishing things, and whatever you're finishing them to your liking, like finishing them successfully, whatever that means for you, then you can keep doing it the way you're doing it. But if you're only writing the first half of stuff, or only getting to the end, or you're never able to finish anything, then it might be time to look at whether you could go at this in a different way. And that could, you know, maybe you're making outlines with Roman numerals and it's not working for you, then try something else. But, or maybe you're pantsing, but if you're not finishing, then pantsing isn't your process. It's just what you're doing.
Yeah. And actually, one of the things I was talking about with a person I know who wants to write graphic novels is the idea of, she's a very visual person. And so she would create her outline in a very, in a picture oriented way. So like when she's thinking about a story, she, or it looks like a storyboard for a film or something like that. And that's really cool. But I couldn't do that. I just don't think that way. But I love the fact that she thinks that way. And that's a, you know, I would love to be able to do that, but it's not necessarily the way that I would go about it. But it's pretty darn cool. Her journal looks cooler than mine does, is all I'm saying.
Yeah, it would, I would imagine it looks cooler than mine too. I would like to think that way. But as you said, I too do not.
Yeah, I heard one time Michael Ondaatje was saying that he never thinks in terms of words. He thinks in terms of images. And I just, that's always stuck with me because his books translate into such great films. And that makes perfect sense to me, but has nothing to do with the way that I process stories. So
no, anyway. I think in words.
Yep, me too. Very cool. Does anyone have any books that they would like to talk about? Because I do.
I definitely do, but I have to think. That's okay.
Let's take a quick break and then we'll talk about what we've been reading.
Listeners, there's honestly nothing I love more than a good writing retreat, especially one that comes with solid coaching and the chance to meet other writers who are working on similar projects. This fall, 3 Author Accelerator certified book coaches are offering what sounds like a dream retreat if what you're working on is telling your own story. It's called Mainly Memoir, and it's a retreat for women writers in historic Biddeford, Maine. Mainly Memoir will provide 3 days in the gorgeous Maine woods in September with one-on-one coaching both before, during, and after the retreat. It is the perfect opportunity to give yourself the gift of time and focus so that you can make real progress on your memoir this year. Mainly Memoir will be held from September 21st through 24th, 2023. A scholarship is available for a memoirist from a community that has been traditionally underrepresented in publishing. Learn more at mainlymemoir.com, and as you've probably guessed, Mainly is spelled M-A-I-N-E-L-Y. So that's Maine the state, mainlymemoir.com.
I have been watching Daisy Jones and the Six on whatever it's on. And I am loving it. I was a big fan of the book, and I was really curious about how this is going to get translated into a series. And they have taken some liberties, but they have done a spectacular job. And then I realized, Taylor Jenkins Reid. I like her writing, and I remembered thinking that she had written a whole bunch of other things that I hadn't read. And so I downloaded the audio of The Seven Husbands of Evelyn Hugo, and I am really enjoying it. I guess that's, I think when I downloaded it, it had something like 15,000 reviews, and it was like 4.5 stars or something like that. Taylor Jenkins Reid, I have to say, her talent is creating really specific characters. She's so good. Like Daisy Jones and the Six is told in terms of the story of a Fleetwood Mac type band told through the voices of the various people being interviewed about the band. And they have to be very specific characters. They're telling their story, and then you have to somehow just through their individual voices get this bigger picture. And The Seven Husbands of Evelyn Hugo is really a similar sort of book. And I also loved the Carrie Soto tennis book, whatever it was, Carrie Soto Comes Back or something like that. And I also liked Malibu Rising. And that seems to be her real talent. I mean, she's got a great talent for plot too, but her character renderings are really incredible. So heartily, I mean, I'm late to the game on Seven Husbands of Evelyn Hugo, but really, really recommend it. And if you have not tried Daisy Jones and the Six, either the show or the book, I highly recommend that. And by the way, the audio of Daisy Jones and the Six, killer narrators. Jennifer Beals is Daisy in the audiobook of Daisy Jones and the Six, and she's perfect, absolutely perfect, really, really good.
You make that sound super fun.
It is really fun. Yeah.
Well, I will choose, because I've actually been reading a lot lately. So I'm choosing one that I think will go with this. So I just finished The Sweet Spot by Amy Poppel, and I'm really hoping to ask her to come on the process, because she happened to mention to me in a DM exchange that she'd had some issues with the structure. So I'm hoping she'll come on. But the reason I want to bring it up is that it is a multi-POV kind of slapstick, definitely family comedy that takes place in New York, and the glory of it. The reason I'm going to keep this book on my shelf forever is that every point of view is so dramatically different. You know who that is within the first sentence, because she's created every character just so perfectly. Or you know that it's not somebody you've heard before, because it does hop around a lot. So it's a really fun story. It's a little hard to sum up other than, you know, revenge gone wrong and yet somehow ends up right might be a good way to sum up. But anyway, it's a absolute model of the multi-POV.
Cool. The reading has been good lately. You know, when you get in those ruts and you're disappointed by a lot of books. I've been really excited about a lot of books. And Harlan Coben's about to come out with a new one that I'm super excited to listen to as well. So I'm feeling good about the reading right now. It's been good reading.
Yeah,
You've had some great piles. Yeah, you've had some great to-read piles.
Yeah, I've got a pile of DNFs too. But yeah, I have had some luck. And if you want to hear more about what I've been reading, I have my own Substack. So everyone should totally come and hit kjda.substack.com, or just go to my website, which is very easy to find. And there's all the ways to sign up for it there. But yeah, every week I'm throwing out some books I've been loving, and I've been having, this is like both a promo that you should go and hear my, or go and sign up for my newsletter. But also, I know that one of the things we talk about on the podcast a lot is finding a way to communicate with readers that works for you if you want to have a newsletter. And I've sort of finally figured out that, the one thing I would like to talk to you about is what I have been reading. So
I want to throw out a quick shout out. So one of the things that has been really cool for me to watch about Serena's writing is that people really, really connect with certain characters over and over and over again. I keep hearing about, and I love all of her characters, but there's certain characters that really seem to land with people on an emotional level. And Wesley and Jamie, they're little compound name is WESME. People tend to love them from the Him and Us and Epic books. And her new book, The New Guy, I think this is going to be one of those couples that sticks Aww. Around on a really emotional level. These guys are fantastic. I fell in love with them. I want to know more about them. So it was really exciting for me to read this newest book of yours. It was really, really good.
Well, thank you. They'll be back in the next one.
Yay! I like it. All right. Well, this has been this selfishly for me. I proposed this episode because I was feeling upset. I was feeling frustrated and I was feeling pissed off with my writing. And I feel rejuvenated. I hope all of you feel like you're going to go out and outline in whatever form that takes for you, because I'm actually really motivated as soon as we're done with this. And I'm going to go work on my outline because I suddenly have this understanding of how important it's going to be to this book, and I'm really grateful to both of you. That's why we need other writers in our lives, so that we can help each other see that the work takes many forms. And sometimes, yeah, it's really, really frustrating. But thank you so much, you guys. I really appreciate it.
It was fun.
Yeah.
It was totally fun.
Well, excellent.
I'm staring strangely at my screen because I can't figure out if I'm muted. Sorry.
All right, everyone. Until next week, keep outlining, by the way. Until next week, keep your butt in the chair and your head in the game.
The Hashtag Am Writing podcast is produced by Andrew Perella. Our intro music, aptly titled Unemployed Monday, was written and played by Max Cohen. Andrew and Max were paid for their time and their creative output because everyone deserves to be paid for their work.
Listeners, I've got a podcast recommendation for you. Have you tried A Bookish Home yet? I've been a guest, and it's a delight. Librarian and writer Laura Zaro Kopinski interviews a different author each week, so you can add to your TBR list while getting the inside scoop on the winding road to publication. Coming up this spring, she'll be talking to Amy Poppel, Sarah Penner, Maggie Smith, and many more. So, look for A Bookish Home wherever you get your podcasts.